There's a number of things that catches our attention from time to time. I like beautiful scenery. I love mountain views. I like valleys. I like classic cars. I like motorcycles. A lot of times mankind is impressed by ruins. Here's the old stuff. Machu Picchu is one of the 20 most beautiful ruins, it is said, in the world. 8,000 feet, southeast Peru. It was a citadel, abandoned, they think, because they were escaping from the Spanish. Well, that's impressive, but it's ruins. Or you could go to Rome, Italy, and here's the Colosseum. Here's where Christians were sacrificed and battles were fought and the area was flooded and they'd have ship battles and all those kind of things. But the reality is, I don't like seeing just a bunch of ruins. I want to see the things that are neat, that are built, that are successful. And so I want to talk about this morning a series that'll piggyback on one that we had done at first, where we had talked about dreaming the dream and seeing the visions and making the dreams come true. And so I'd like us to think about building a better tomorrow. You say, but what about yesterday? Yesterday's history. I can't do anything about yesterday or history in general. It is what it is, good, bad, or indifferent. But repeatedly, the Bible talks about this aspect of building, that we are a building, that we are to be builders. We'll look this morning in the book of Nehemiah and in chapter 2 and down in verse 18. And they said, let us arise and build. It's exciting for us to be here in a building our own. It has lots of work to do. We're just rejoiced for new members and dedicated believers here, whether you're regularly with us or visiting. It's just a pleasure to be together. I grew up watching my father build things. I like doing that. I watch some of the young men, the younger men that's been helping here at the building, and I'm just totally impressed with what's being done. Whether it happens to be Bob Wielander and rebuilding the back porch for us, doing an excellent job, Tim McVicker and painting and building walls, or Jeff and Travis tearing down walls, or others in landscaping and selling off some of the material that we don't need. And just an enormous amount of effort goes in, and it's exciting when you do that. I don't like just laying around very well. I mean, I could lay around and be bored, provided we're talking about 15 seconds. I know I've hit my maximum 15 minutes. I want to be doing something. I don't do well just staring at the ceiling. Think about this idea of building. In 1 Kings in chapter 6 and down in verse 1, and he began to build the house of the Lord. Now, I know he didn't use a backhoe. I'm using that just as a metaphor of one aspect of building. And so the Lord's house needed to be built. Psalm 127 and in verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. Somebody said, look, I don't need God's help. I don't need his advice. I've got it all figured out. I said, good for you. It's not apt to work quite as well. And that's what God said. If he's involved in the plans, you're apt to have success in those areas. In Jeremiah chapter 31 and down in verse 28, Jeremiah 30 and 31 are kingdom prophecies. And here's where God says, I will watch over them to build and to plant, declares the Lord. Have you thought about yourself being planted by God? God said, you're my vineyard. You're my sheepfold. I'm interested in it doing well. If I'm driving a car, or in my case a pickup truck, I want it to run well. It doesn't have to be flawless looking, but I want it to do a good job. If I'm working on a project, I want it to end up pretty nice. It doesn't have to be flawless. So how about God's work in you? Has he done a pretty good job? Or you say, there's a lot of work needs to be done yet. We're still in the renovation stage. Or you say, Lord, thank you for everything that you've done for me. Think about Jesus in Matthew 16 and down in verse 18. On this rock I will build my church. And so Jesus was a builder. Here is Peter talks about us as living stones built up as a temple of God. So we're part of the building that is done. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and down in verse 11, here's where Paul tells the Thessalonians, and build up one another. So we're doing a lot of physical things to make this building better, more workable, and things along this line. I've mentioned before, but Bill Crandall, you've been an angel of mercy here. We had a general inspector come through, and I said, just look at the main thing, something that's apt to go bad, and let us know. And so he said these various things. We had a heating consultant come through, and they did certain things. But Bill's background is in heating, and he had a half a page of things, and they're notable things. This isn't, you know, the top of the thing was dusty. And so we're so thankful for you helping us. Because really, that's kind of what we're involved in. If you're working with children, you're building them up to adults. If you're in a business or a corporation, you're trying to help that be successful in every area. You say, wow, will it be better for me having been here than before? Even when I rent a rental car, I want to bring it back with a little bit better than I even got it. Now, I want it to be real good when I got it. But I don't mind, you know, leaving a couple dollars more in gasoline or cleaner or something like that. Certainly if I borrow somebody else's, whatever, they're going to loan me a car or truck or whatever, I want it to be in better condition for me having been in my care than before. Rather than borrow and say, man, I really messed that up, Mike. Well, I guess you can have it back now. Oh, thanks. Now that you've fouled the thing up. So thinking about yourself as participating in something along that line. I like this graphic. I looked at a number of animals and in water. And here's a cat swimming along, looking a little concerned. Cats can swim. Dogs can swim. Tigers love to swim. But I wanted us to think about ourselves in this building and worshiping together, that our job isn't just staying afloat. Our job isn't just maintaining the status quo. Some congregations, you say, how are you doing? Well, I'm holding my own. Well, you mean that means I'm not growing any, but I hadn't totally weathered up and died. That's not where we ought to be as God's people. We ought to be an exciting and enthusiastic group of believers, because I don't want it just to be mediocre. I don't want to say, well, how's everything? Well, it's mediocre. I like football, but I tell you what, if it's a mediocre, boring game, even if my team is involved, I may watch it, but I don't have much enthusiasm. If it's somebody else's team, I'm not interested at all. I want things that are really exciting. Now, Travis is on the other hand. He's not here this morning. He's down in Salem, but he'll watch a game, whether we're losing, boring, or whatever it is. I'm not quite that interested in watching losing events. I want to be part of something that's exciting, that's successful, and moving forward. So think about this. The idea of to revive means to breathe life in again. As believers talk about revival, that's what we ought to be involved in, not just survival. Hey, do you think we can hang out here and just survive for the next 45 years? Well, that's not fun. What's fun is when individuals are really enjoying being together, growing together, becoming bigger and better because we're together. I like to swim. I don't like to swim in cold water real well, but if I swim long enough and hard enough, I warm up and the water is, you know, kind of becomes tolerable. But when we think about our mission really is progress, not just I don't want to drown. And so how about us? Are we people zealous of good works? That's what Titus 2:14 says we're purchased for. I purchase certain things, and we all do, to accommodate a certain situation. If it's real warm, maybe we buy a fan. I want the fan to blow. What if the fan thing won't turn? Well, if I just bought it, I'm taking it back. If I've had it a while and it won't turn, and it's not just, you know, circuit breaker's out or the wires are damaged, I'm going to throw it out. I just don't want things that don't do what they should do. What if you had a watchdog and he wouldn't watch, right? Well, you might, oh, what a great dog. I love having a dog. Oh, poopsie, whoopsie, you come here. Let me feed you and take you to the veterinarian for $30 million. I said, well, poopsie, it's been nice knowing you. So I want them to do, and maybe the purpose for the dog is companionship, and that's something different. You generally don't have watch cats, do you? They don't meow when an intruder is coming in. And so we want to be people that are involved in what the Lord would have us to be involved in. There's elements I want us to think about of exhibiting a New Testament boldness, of being willing to do what God would have us to do, of expressing a hospitality, an area of zeal that really stirs others up. 2 Corinthians, I have chapter 2 and verse 9. It should be chapter 9 and in verse 2. How their zeal stirred up many of the others. It's exciting just watching other people be excited. I don't often go to a movie. If I go to a movie, ever go to a really kind of a funny movie? But you find out other people are laughing even harder than you, and it's fun just to hear the kids laugh or other people laugh. It's just interesting. They're involved, and it's really a great movie, and you're glad you're there. What do you do if you come across a movie that's really a stink movie and you wish you weren't? Well, I leave. I don't want to pay money and stay there or say, well, yeah, but I've already paid the money. Miles will stay. If the movie's throwing up on me, look, I'm not going to stay there. Go out, breathe, look at the sky, do something more profitable. And so I'd like us to think about that element of building a better tomorrow. Because that's what Nehemiah did. We're going to take just a couple minutes and look at his life. Nehemiah chapter 1, and as you get down there toward verse 11, you find out he's a cupbearer. Now, we have cupbearers in our family. Husbands, we usually call it our wives. You know, they bring us a cup of coffee and a cup of tea and hot chocolate and all such as this. And it works out pretty well. But think how it is in the intrigue of royalty, where you didn't know how many of the courtesans were really trying to poison you. And so you would have somebody that you absolutely trusted. And you knew whatever happened, they would die for you. And just think about if you choose somebody here, and I was going to choose Rocky, but everybody said, yeah, I'll choose Rocky. And I just look all the way in the back, and there's Tom Burrell. And he waves to me and got a great smile and such as that. But just think what it was if Tom said, look, I'll do anything for you. I will die for you. And Nehemiah's job was to taste whatever the king was going to drink. And if Nehemiah keeled over, he knew the king will survive. That's what a cupbearer was. He was the most trusted individual, I'll just say, in your cabinet. And Nehemiah says, I was cupbearer for the king. The Jews have, and we'll note this here in just a moment, have gone into captivity, have come out of captivity. The Persians have taken over, and he's still back there, and he's in a responsible position. Now, what happened was the Jews had gotten into sin. Jeremiah told them, don't do that. If you get all steeped in sin, there's going to be consequences, and you're going to be carried off into captivity. And that happened in three waves. Generally, the numbers are given as you're counting down, 606-597-586. And they went into captivity, just like Jeremiah said. And having been carried off to Babylon and other people transported in, the Jews were there for 70 years. And then just like Jeremiah foretold, then they were released. In fact, they were released in three waves. But now you find 100 more years have passed. And some of the Jews have come back and rebuilt the temple and rebuilt their houses, but they haven't rebuilt the wall. And Nehemiah gets a message from some of his relatives. He said, some of my brothers came, and they give him this message that the wall is broken down and that the people, that they are in distress. And what Nehemiah does is he weeps and mourns. A lot of time has passed. Think about if it was you. You got a great job in the government, your job's secure, and your relatives say, yeah, but back home, why, it's terrible. Nehemiah could have said, it's not my problem. They're the ones that wanted to go back. In fact, I've never actually been there. I use from homeland on my mother's side, I say, Paul, don't you want to go back home? I said, home to where? Budapest, Hungary. No, I've never been to Hungary. It's just some of my relatives were born there and, you know, came across on the Santa Maria or whatever they did, and they got here sometime or another, but I, you know, if I had nothing else to do, I might go there. But no, I don't have a longing to go back there. And Nehemiah had that great kind of attitude. And it's not like, look, I got a good job. I'm not going to do that. And what had happened to God's people during that time? In Psalm 137 and down in verse 1, there's where they say, by the rivers of Babylon, that we've lived back here for 70 years, for 170 years, and we wept by the rivers. Some people cry a lot. I don't cry a lot. Once in a while, but it's once in a really long while. Generally, women cry more than men. It is said because of how your brain cells connect and light up by virtual stimuli. I think a men's brain, they got a 40-watt bulb over here. It comes on, says, eh, everything's fine. You know, and women, your mind lights up, you know, like Las Vegas or Reno, Nevada. And the sides of your brain talk to each other more freely. For men, you know, our halves of our brain live in the same little room, but they don't much talk to each other. And that's just the way it is. And said, but we were by the rivers, and we hung up our harps on the willows. And our captors said, sing us a song. You know when you're feeling really rotten? How'd you like to, okay, let me sing you a cheery song since I feel rotten. Well, no, man, I don't feel rotten. I don't want to sing a song. That was home, and they were ripped out of it, and their temple and their city destroyed. Now, let's sing some. Okay, we're all going to sing and be happy. He said, it's not going to happen. This was our situation. And so upon the willows, we hung up our hearts. It just wasn't happy. Nehemiah chapter 1 and in verse 4, now it came about when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. He is grieving over the condition of his city. It grieves me if I hear of friends that they've come across tremendously hard times. The city I grew up in is doing pretty well, meaning for the Cleveland, the city that it is. It's actually doing a little better than when I was there. It had gone into recession, depression. bulldozed and condemned houses. Well, it's kind of going through a little revival, and so I'm pleased with that. Nehemiah says, really what was bothering him is the reproach. He says, thy people are in great reproach. You know how the pagans say, you guys are saying there's one God, and your one God lives in Jerusalem, and your one God lives in the temple in that city of Jerusalem. In fact, your one God lives in one room of that temple in the city of Jerusalem that's now all destroyed. And if you got such a great God, how come your town is a dump? As your thing. He says, pretty good argument. Our gates are burned with fire, and our wall is torn down. So he has motivation to go and fix this. And I'd like you to think about ourselves. God's not honored by ruins and mediocrity. If somebody says, let's just do just enough to get by. Let's not get excited. After all, we're all going to die. Well, that's right. And eventually this will be bulldozed or bombed or expanded into 16-story, high-rise something. That's all right. Our job is to serve our own generation. Those of us that are older, our art and desire is get things ready because you're the next leadership. And we feel good about that. But in that, we want you to step forward as well. You say, how do you do that? How do you build a better tomorrow? I like this one graphic. It said, are some people hurting too much to find God? Does God really give everyone a fair shot at salvation? Or does he consider some of us to be expendable? When I grew up, that's how I felt about me. I was one of the expendable ones. God's saying, look, this gospel is for all. We've got an opportunity to share it with people round about us. And so as we think about that, consider Nehemiah chapter 1 and in verse 6. He didn't want to just rebuild the wall, but he says, thy people are in great distress. He wanted to go back and do some rebuilding. But it wasn't just architecture. And so we've been doing a number of things here with our building and getting it ready and making it better and things we needed to do, and just appreciated that. And I've mentioned several times I appreciate the Alexanders for finding, and I appreciate the Honeysets and Jerry saying, okay, now here's how you can afford that. That's all blessings of God. And you participated in your own way. But the only thing that makes that worthwhile, it's not the building itself, but what we can do in the building. It's reaching others, blessing others, and making it better for others as we worship the God of all creation. So let's talk about some things along that line. And that is, if we're going to build a better tomorrow for this congregation and the people in our community, the reality is we've got to care. And we really aren't interested in lightening somebody else's load until we can feel their pain. Beautiful passage in Galatians 6, verse 1 and 2. And a lot of times we hurry up and we drop on down into verse 2. But I'd like you to read with me Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1. It said, brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to himself, lest you too be tempted. What if somebody comes to you and says, well, I need to tell you, here is some sin I'm struggling with. And you go, you freak out. What? I can't believe it. How could you possibly do that? I can't stand it. That they, that shouldn't have shared it with that person. You know, what if you go to the doctor and you say, doctor, I got a problem, and he freaks out. Oh, no. Oh, I can't handle it. He's like, well, I think I need a different doctor. We want a doctor that's going to be calm, that'll give us a good evaluation of whatever is going on and point us in the right direction. And so when we talk to somebody that's hurting, think about that. Do we say, I understand. it doesn't mean that you have to have done the same thing. It doesn't mean that you're condoning what they did do. But you understand how they got themselves into such a fix as that. And then you go down to verse 2, where he says, bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. People need help. We all need help. We want to treat our neighbors as ourselves. One person said, sightseers and spectators don't identify with a ruined world through the eyes of God. We go, oh man, that is a mess. You want to help? Oh no, man, I don't want to help in any messy stuff. I just want to be where it's all clean and neat and, you know, all the strings are tied up and I don't want to have to get involved. Well, getting involved with people a lot of times means getting involved in their lives, and sometimes it's a little bit messy. But the reality is Nehemiah had to make a choice. And that choice was between being a food taster and a life changer. We've all got that choice. Hey, we're going to go out this afternoon. I'll say, get a Happy Meal or whatever you're going to do. Go home, get roast beef or a hamburger or pizza or whatever it happens to be. But God has called us to do more than that, hasn't he? Romans 14, 17, that the kingdom of God is not eating and drinking, but love, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. And so there's more to us than, you know, just, hey, we had a great meal, although a great meal is appreciated. Because sometimes a person has to look beyond the immediate. Because when you change lives, you change the world. We don't have to change the entire world. I don't need to change Tibet and, you know, and what they're doing in Saudi Arabia. But you can change the part of the world that you live in. That's a great opportunity. Because somebody changed your world when they shared the gospel of Christ with you. We've got to be people who care. If we're not, then, you know, that old statement, people aren't going to care about how much you know until they know how much you care. As I deal with people, I want to look in their eyes and let them know I care about you. Romans chapter 12 and down in verse 15, weep with those who weep. Well, when I say I don't cry, I mean, tears generally don't run down my cheeks and you hear anything. But much more frequently, my eyes will brim with tears. I can feel it sting in such as that. We just don't like to express it that way. That's not the only side. He also said, rejoice with those who rejoice, right? It's just not all one way. And so it's not the Christianity, boy, that's mournful. No, but people have tragedy in their life. And tell them you care. And they mean a lot to you. And I'm willing to help, even if it means shine your shoes. A neat passage in Philippians 3 and in verse 18. Here's where Paul talks about some of the opponents of Christ. And as he's writing to Philippians, he said, I tell you this, even weeping. So he's writing a letter. Presumably tears are running down his cheeks. Now I think about that. When somebody really gets hurt with false doctrine and carried off, how much that means to you. You want them to be blessed and do well and all along that line. The passage we're familiar with is in John chapter 11 and down verse 35 with the death of Lazarus. And Jesus wept. In our culture, we males don't like to do that much. It doesn't strike people as a sign of masculinity. But obviously, if every time somebody comes to your desk at work or on the job site, and look, wait a minute, this work order doesn't, and you just break down and dissolve in tears, that's not going to work very well. But when there's a genuine thing to be grieved about, and people can see it in your face, that you're just not blowing it off, you can have that strength plus gentleness. So as we think about things along this line, consider. One person said, can we hear the cries of the aborted unknown, the divorced, those trapped in sin, those abused, those neglected, and the abandoned? Or is it just, that's not my problem. See, I got to get lunch today, and I got to get up for work tomorrow. but we don't care about others. But when you do, that's a whole new dimension. To have revival, it means we're going to be committed to fervent prayer. One of the first families I ever had the opportunity of sharing the gospel with, not the very first, but one of the first, Ken and Gwen Smith. And they lived in Fife, and they worshiped with us and when I was in Sumner and West Campus and Orchard Street, different places. Gwen had a little thing in her younger years. She talked about kind of these little wispy prayers that don't mean much, and she called them twinkle, twinkle, little stars, right? It's kind of, yeah, we're kind of putting it out there, but we're not totally serious about it. Well, why not? Well, there might be different reasons. How serious are you about prayer? Nehemiah chapter 1 and in verse 4, Nehemiah talks about how ardent he felt about prayer. And it came about when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days and was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, great and awesome God, who preserves covenant and loving kindness with those who love him and keep his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open to hear the prayer of thy servant, which I am praying before thee now, day and night, on behalf of the sons of Israel, thy servants, confessing the sins of the sons of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. I, not them rascal Jews. He said, God, I did the same things wrong. And he goes all the way down through verse 11. Ardent, ardent prayer. So how about our prayers? Are they twinkle, twinkle, little stars? Or are we really serious? So I want you to think about this morning. It may be God has gotten you ready. And you say, my heart is soft because God can't plant in hard soil. And he needs a soft heart for things to grow. And if his word has penetrated your heart, and you're thinking, you know what, I am so ready to change my life. I'm willing to repent of my sins. I believe in that Savior. I'm willing to be buried in the waters of baptism. I want to rise. I want to walk in a new life. I want to be forgiven. I want them on my side. I want Christians as my friends and the people that surround me. I want God to work out all things together for good. And I want to go to heaven. We've got an opportunity this morning. We're going to sing an invitation song. And as you're there, you may think, you know, I could use some prayers. Maybe that's it.